consequence of appropriations made by them.
Greetings and welcome to the Far and Beyond podcast, your guide to the legal intricacies behind the contract and fiscal laws that power the U.S. Army and the Department of Defense. I'm Major Sarah Hickman.
And I am Major Daniel Franco. Together we are your co-host. On this episode of the Far and Beyond, we will explore government shutdowns and the temporary solutions known as continuing resolutions.
As many of you are likely aware, the President recently signed a continuing resolution on September 26, 2024. This continuing resolution prevented a costly government shutdown. On this episode, we have a special guest speaker with us, and together we're going to break down exactly what is a government shutdown, what is a continuing resolution. We'll delve into the legal ramifications that are relevant to our listeners.
With us today, we have Lieutenant Colonel Andrew Scott. Lieutenant Colonel Scott is a Reserve Judge Advocate and professor here at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School, Contract and Fiscal Law Department. In his civilian capacity, Lieutenant Colonel Scott is counsel and a professional staff member on the Senate Armed Services Committee. Lieutenant Colonel Scott previously served on active duty for 14 years in various positions, including two deployments.
Lieutenant Colonel Scott, thank you again so much for being here with us today and for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to come and talk to us. So let's just go ahead and dive right into our topic. So government shutdowns, furloughs, we hear these words thrown around all the time, especially in the news of late. I want to drill down for our listeners. What are we talking about when we are actually hearing that term government shutdown?
Well, thanks for having me. I'm really glad to be here. It's a really interesting topic that we've heard a lot about in the last 10 years. There have been several shutdowns. All of them look a little bit different. It depends on which laws are in effect at the time of the shutdown and sort of what the goals of the policymakers who are leading the shutdown or the government funding effort, what their goals are. So furloughs, just to answer your question specifically, furloughs are temporary stoppages of work for government employees. When the government is shut down, as you know, there aren't appropriations available to pay most government workers. And if you can't pay them, you can't make them work. So essentially, when there is a government shutdown, what that means is that most of the ordinary functions of the U.S. federal government have to stop. Congress has the power of the purse. Congress writes the checks for the U.S. government. That's what appropriations are. Without proper appropriations, the government really can't spend money. Under a different set of jurisprudence outside of that, there are emergency functions of government that have to continue, and those are invested not in the power of the purse, but in other executive powers, things like the police power, the executive power of the president, the president's position as commander-in-chief to defend the country. And there are some quirky little provisions in the Constitution itself about, for example, members of Congress shall be paid, and that's been interpreted to mean that they have to be paid. Members of Congress don't go on furlough, and in fact, they continue to get paid. So the vast majority of federal workers are temporarily laid off, in effect. They're not terminated from employment, and they are expected to return to work when the government shutdown is over. Every government agency designates key and essential personnel who are required to keep the government functioning, to keep that agency functioning, to basically prevent it from falling apart. And those designations are made by agencies. It's usually limited to senior management and field workers who perform functions that have to essentially keep the lights on. For the military, for the Department of Defense, the vast majority of workers actually continue to work. Uniformed military are all deemed key and essential personnel. So what a shutdown looks like for the Department of Defense is very different than what the shutdown would look like for another government agency. in DOD, most uniformed workers are not furloughed. But then you have a huge federal civilian workforce as well. You have the DOD workforce, and then each military service has its own workforce. The Department of the Army has a workforce, etc. A large percentage of those folks would be furloughed. So that's what a furlough is. It's a temporary work stoppage. And when there's a government shutdown, federal employees, including military members, are either furloughed or ordered to keep working. Military members continue to work. Most federal civilians don't work. Now, I work in my civilian job on the Hill for the U.S. Senate. Congressional staff are like military, uniformed military, in that they're all deemed essential. And if you think about the dynamics of a shutdown, staffs have to be working to try to resolve whatever differences there are among members. So that's actually a very busy time on the Hill, and it's really kind of an all hands on deck situation. So whether I'm in my reserve capacity or working as a Senate employee, I would be working through a shutdown and not furloughed.
So essential regardless of which hat you're wearing, sir.
Yeah, that's right.
So, sir, one question that I have is, you mentioned appropriations. What's the difference between appropriations and authorizations?
Sure. That's definitely something that a lot of people get confused. I used to get confused about it before I studied actually here at the JAG school. Every government agency has to be authorized to do the things that it does. So the Department of Agriculture, they administer the U.S. food stamp program. That program has to be authorized. The parameters of the program, the eligibility for the program, how it's administered, the oversight mechanisms, for how long it's authorized, all of those types of decisions are policy decisions that have to be authorized. In addition to all of that, all of those programs have to be funded. The actual funding of the activities that are authorized, that's what an appropriation is. Most government agencies are on multi-year authorization cycles. So, for example, I'm not sure with agriculture. I think the Department of Agriculture is on a 5-year cycle. Each agency is slightly different. But so, for example, just let's say that I'm correct that it's 5 years for agriculture. Every 5 years, they would have to reauthorize certain programs. Some government programs have permanent authorizations. Other ones expire after a term of years. DOD is unique. The Department of Defense has to be reauthorized every single year. So we are on an annual authorization cycle. Again, like other agencies, DOD has permanent authorizations, but they also have a lot of expiring authorizations, and they have to be reauthorized every year. So that's what authorizations are. They really set the parameters for policy. They create government programs. That's really kind of where the policy aspect is. Appropriations, unlike authorizations for every government agency, they are all done annually. The government appropriates, Congress and the president, when he signs bills into law, appropriations are done every single year. And so for most government agencies, the appropriations bill annually is really the only bill pertinent to their agency that's going to be passing every single year. DOD is different. DOD has both an Authorization Act and the Appropriations Act every single year.
And sir, if I may, can you give our listeners like examples of like some of those authorizations? Because I'm sure like some of the military have probably seen them but didn't really understand like that those were the authorizations at play that Congress was having to deal with every year.
Yeah, sure. So for example, every year in my portfolio, I work on personnel policy of the Department of Defense. One of the things I work on is end strength. So every year, Congress will authorize end strength for the military. So for the Army, I think last year's end strength authorization was around 452,000. Don't quote me on that. Every year, Congress will authorize a certain number of service members to be on active duty, right? That has to be reauthorized every single year. If it's not reauthorized, then the authorization expires, and then there's no law in effect on how many service members are allowed to be on active duty. Similarly, all of the pay for those service members has to be appropriated every single year. And this gets into another fun topic for people interested in fiscal law, which is colors of money, right? So there are different categories of money that are used. Some categories of money are good for multiple years. And so let's say you authorize it in year one. In year three, even if, you know, the appropriations bill says nothing about it, if the money is still there, you can still use it. Most money in DOD is actually authorized, appropriated every single year. And so salaries are a good example of that. Salaries come out of annual funds. The authorization will be set for this is the number of service members you can have on active duty. And then Congress will appropriate a certain amount of money based on those authorizations.
And when you mention authorization, are we talking about the National Defense Authorization Act, sir?
Yeah, so there's different ways you can enact policy. Because DOD is the largest government agency, and because it has an annual need for authorizations, DOD passes a law every single year called the National Defense Authorization Act, or NDAA for short. Not every agency gets its own standalone bill, and often authorizations will be tacked on to the DOD, to the NDAA, because it's a legislative vehicle. There's limited time on the floor, especially of the Senate, because of procedural rules, and it's hard to vote out each bill separately. So the NDAA is the annual military authorization bill, but it also serves as a legislative vehicle for other bills that may just not be big enough or frequent enough to demand their own time on the floor of the Senate or the House.
For our listeners, when you refer to the annual bill, are you talking about the calendar year or the fiscal year?
The U.S. fiscal year is 1 October to 30 September, right? It used to be, I think a long time ago, the fiscal year and the calendar year were the same. But with the holidays at the end of the year, Congress was habitually not having next year's bill ready in time. And so they moved it back so that the fiscal year would end essentially 3 months before the holidays, to give Congress the impetus to pass these laws without having the holidays conflict. Now, as we know, even with them moved back, they still rarely will pass the appropriations bills in time, and they'll have to pass a temporary stopgap appropriation, which is called a continuing resolution. But yes, the fiscal year governs the Appropriations Act.
And sir, you mentioned continuing resolutions or stop gaps. I want to take just a step back and kind of let's talk a little bit more about what are the differences between an appropriation and a continuing resolution.
Yeah, so appropriations are what you could think of as normal order. Every year, the Senate Appropriations Committee and the House Appropriations Committee will draft these large bills, which essentially write the checks for the whole federal government. And if you ever read an Appropriations Act, it's really just a whole bunch of text with many sentences that say, you know, for the Fish and Wildlife Service, X number of dollars are appropriated, right? And there are going to be subcategories. Same is true for the Department of Defense, right? Big, huge pots of money, hundreds of billions of dollars, in some cases like operations and maintenance. That's a huge pot of money. You're going to have hundreds of millions of dollars appropriated. So in the normal order of things, the way things should work in the Senate and the House, these bills are written by the committees. They are debated at the committee level, the House Appropriations Committee and the Senate Appropriations Committee. They are passed out of committee. They are then considered on the floor of the legislative body, the Senate or the House. Once they are both passed, then you have to conference the bill. That's the third branch of Congress is the conference committee. Once you have a version in the Senate and a version in the House, then the Senate and the House have to get together in the form of a conference committee and figure out how they're going to resolve all the differences between the two bills, because the Senate and the House are different legislative bodies. They will often have differing provisions.
And the Constitution requires one bill.
One bill to go to the president for signature. So you go through the conference process, then Once the final text is agreed by the conference committee, it goes back to the Senate and House. Both chambers then have to pass the final language. So the conference language does have to pass the full chamber of the House and the Senate. Once that's done, then it goes to the president. So that's the appropriations cycle. Sometimes, and the way it is supposed to work is that each government agency, at least each cabinet-level agency, is supposed to have its own appropriations act, right? So there should be a defense appropriations act. There should be an agriculture appropriations act. There should be a treasury appropriations act. There should be a Department of Homeland Security Appropriations Act. Each one of those should be debated and passed individually. That's the normal order. That is the way it is supposed to be. That obviously takes a lot of time. And over time, Congress has shrunk its legislative calendar. Members spend less time in Washington than they used to, so that they can spend more time in their districts talking to their people that they represent, understanding local issues. And so as a result of the kind of calendar squeeze and other political reasons, what you often see is an omnibus appropriations bill. And you hear this term, the omnibus bill, all the time. And all that means is that it's an appropriations bill that has all of the different 13 different appropriations together in a single bill. And then that goes through the same process that I mentioned before, and one big appropriations bill is passed. So that's how it's supposed to work.
And it's actually a lot more common than I think people like to think, that I think every time we are kind of running out of time and there's going to be a potential shutdown, everybody thinks, oh, this is not common. But I think the last I looked, in the last 47 fiscal years, I think only three times we didn't have a continuing resolution.
Yeah, the Omnibus Act. And you have the regular appropriations bills. Recently, it's been much more common to have an omnibus act. Then you have continuing resolutions. And the fiscal year for the government, as we mentioned, runs through September 30th. And appropriations are good through September. Annual appropriations are good at the end of through the end of September. So any money that is appropriated for 1 year or for any number of years, even if it's 5 years, it's going to expire 5 years after the first of October in the year that it's passed. When Congress doesn't have all of that work done, whether it's individual appropriations bills or one big omnibus bill, if they are not done by October 1st, you have to fund the government with something. You have to Congress has to appropriate money for the government to keep operating while it's working out the details of those appropriations bills. That's where the continuing resolution comes into practice. So if you don't have all the appropriations bills signed into law by the president by the end of September, then you have to essentially extend the current year to keep the money flowing until Congress does. And yes, it's very common to do a continuing resolution. Usually they are designed to be short-term measures until the appropriations bills can pass, but sometimes we've had long multi-year periods where the government was funded on a continuing resolution basis. Continuing resolutions tend to only be extensions of the existing appropriations. So you don't get a lot of new appropriations in a continuing resolution, which can cause a lot of problems, especially in the Department of Defense, where if you need to build more ships or start new programs or continue with new phases of programs that have to be funded, if you're operating under a continuing resolution that really only continues the prior year's appropriations, you can run into problems. And that's why when the appropriators do the continuing resolution, they will work closely with the authorizers to make sure that, for example, in shipbuilding, it takes a really long time to build a ship. And the process of starting to build a ship takes a really long time. there's this idea that you can't have any new starts on contracts during a continuing resolution, but certain major activities of the government, especially the Department of Defense, you basically have to have a continuing assembly line, a continuing manufacturing process in order not to lose the industrial capacity. And so sometimes you'll see in a continuing resolution authorizations for new starts. You might change the number of ships you're allowed to have built, or you might authorize a new program to start so that you're not causing delays that would cause substantial harm to the national security. And so in continuing resolutions, you also have these little nuggets of policy, of authorization, that have to be added to accommodate for this kind of gray area where it is a continuation of last year's appropriations bill, but you have to accommodate certain new spending that wasn't accounted for the prior year. So you will see that in a continuing resolution.
Sir, thank you for joining us today and sharing your insights. We appreciate your time and hope to have you back soon.
Thank you for joining us today in this episode of The Far and Beyond. Please make sure to follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
We love to hear from our listeners. Please continue to reach out to us on Facebook and LinkedIn. The information can be found in the show notes from today's episode.
The views expressed today are those of the presenters, not that of the Judge Advocate General's Corps, the Department of the Army, or the Department of Defense.